Welcome. This is James Corbett of The Corbett Report.
And this is James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com, and we both welcome you to another jam-packed episode of The New World Next Week, which, of course, you can find at NewWorldNextWeek.com. And as always, we'd like to thank ParadigmShift.tv for getting this shown on Sky Satellite Channel 201, and a huge thanks to everyone out there who helps share and spread the word about New World Next Week. James, we will begin with, I think, a great way to begin this episode in honor of the new launch of one of your newest ventures, and that is FukushimaUpdate.com, and we'll take a recent piece from there. Over 20 radioactive hotspots found near Tokyo, and we have more reporting from the New York Times and Voice of America, as well as Washington'sblog.com. Tokyo and the adjoining city of Yokohama were found to contain hotspots with very high levels of radiation, and all of the hotspots were originally found by citizens using Geiger counters because the government wasn't really testing. The New York Times reported, quote, the patch of ground was one of more than 20 spots in and around the nation's capital that the citizens group and the respected nuclear research center they worked with found were contaminated with potentially harmful levels of radioactive cesium, end quote. And Voice of America also noted, quote, while the news about high levels of radiation found at one of Tokyo's ballpark complex had been reported overseas, including on the front page of the New York Times, it had yet to be mentioned at all in Japan's mainstream media. James, you also on FukushimaUpdate.com have a related video that comes from an interview the Wall Street Journal conducted with Japan's Minister of Education and Science addressing the alarming issue of the recently discovered radioactive hotspots in Tokyo and other areas far from the Fukushima nuclear plant. So I will hand it back to you, James, to discuss this story as well as anything you may want to add about FukushimaUpdate.com.
Right. Well, in that Minister of Education interview, he is asked about the health effects of these hotspots, and he says, well, the experts agree that there's nothing to worry about because no one's going to stand in the same spot all day. So there you go. I guess that's the official word. And I suppose that probably is true if it really is only isolated to a few hotspots here and there. But as you point out, the citizens are finding these hotspots with their Geiger counters. It's not the government that's actually doing this testing. And just the citizens themselves have been finding hotspot after hotspot. And I just had a chance to talk to Arne Gunderson about this very topic, and I guess that video will probably be up by the time you're watching this video, so I hope you check that out. But basically, yes, he says these hotspots are probably not new, not signs of new radiation. Probably they've been there for a long time, but that's even more worrying in a way, because these hotspots are there, and no one's the government isn't finding them or isn't reporting on them, if they are finding them at any rate. Probably even more important than this is the story that also went up on FukushimaUpdate.com recently about iodine-131 that's been being found in gutters, in soil, in gutters in Tokyo, which indicates that there might be recriticality going on in the Fukushima slag heap, aka the reactors, because iodine-131 has a half-life of 8 days. So if there's new iodine-131 cropping up, then it's being produced from somewhere. So that's an extremely worrying story, and one that I haven't seen getting a lot of attention. So I hope people will take a look at that. And thank you for mentioning, yes, FukushimaUpdate.com, my newest website. I really hope people are checking it on a daily basis. I really am trying to put up everything I can possibly find on Fukushima, and that will include things from all perspectives and all sides of this issue. I don't have a dog in this fight, and I'm not trying to prove a point. I'm really just trying to make this an information resource about everything that's being posted about Fukushima at this time.
And you are now on Twitter at Fukushima Update as well. And one of the other things posted to the site that, James, you and I briefly discussed off mic is that photo of the radiation suits piling up that really just kind of puts it into perspective, and you see it because you can hear stories about this and read about it. But when you see a photo, it really kind of strikes home. A related bit to this, James, in a way, is something from ABC News and by way of blacklistednews.com. Son of Stuxnet? Researchers warn of impending cyber attack. Dooku, D-U-Q-U, a new computer virus using nearly identical parts of the cyber superweapon Stuxnet, has been detected on computer systems in Europe and is believed to be a precursor to a new Stuxnet-like attack, a major U.S.-based cybersecurity company said. And the way that that can be related to our Fukushima updates is the effect on the power plants, nuclear power plants internationally, James. That, I suppose, is our segue to story number two, where we move to my own cyberspacewar.com. Supreme Court of Canada rules internet links not liable, from the Toronto Star. Writers and publishers can't be held liable for online publications that link to defamatory material. The Supreme Court of Canada ruled Wednesday, today here in the States, October 19th. The court dismissed an appeal from Wayne Crooks, a Vancouver businessman and volunteer for the Green Party of Canada. He contends that John Newton, who runs the website p2pnet.net, defamed him by publishing an article that hyperlinked to libelous material. The case required the court to consider whether the common practice of hyperlinking exposes writers and publishers to lawsuits. Internet and public policy experts see it as one of the biggest online defamation cases to date and have been following it closely because it deals with issues fundamental to how the digital world works. Ironically, James, John Newton's article was entitled Free Speech in Canada.
Ironic, isn't it? Yes, absolutely. Well, it's great to have a ruling from the Supreme Court of Canada, my home and native land in this case, that actually makes sense. And really, when you start to look at this case, if you take a moment to look at it and the issues involved, it is a complete no-brainer. They had to rule this way. But amazingly enough, they actually did rule on the side of freedom. So imagine that. And it was a unanimous decision, so it wasn't like it was close or anything. But this goes right to the heart of what the internet is and how it works. And if the idea of trying to hold someone accountable for libel, for linking to a site that contains libelous material, when even the person in the case involved in the case admits that the libel wasn't involved in the article itself, and it wasn't mentioned or commented on in the article, it was just a link to a site that held the libelous material. So if you can hold someone accountable for that, then basically the internet as we know it would cease to exist, and sites like yours and mine just wouldn't be possible. So this is, again, it's a no-brainer, but I'm glad that the Supreme Court of Canada actually made a ruling that makes sense.
I've added in on this post on cyberspacewar.com some of the related bits and even the link to read the, of course, lengthy judgment in this case from the Supreme Court of Canada. James, we've gone from Japan to Canada, and for our third and final story, we will go to Greece. By way of the intelhub.com, citizens swarm the streets of Greece in a whirl of violence. A parliamentary vote to deepen the spending cuts by the Greek government is pushing people by the hundreds of thousands to act now and swarm the streets, erupting them into a whirl of violence. The protest was formed for the first day of a huge two-day strike by private sector and civil servant workers. An excerpt from the Wall Street Journal described how the locals feel, quote, "We have reached the limits of our endurance, and what is worse is that there is no ray of hope. We want to send a message that these austerity policies have been a catastrophe for Greece," end quote, said a spokesman for a private sector union. Prime Minister George Papandreou's PASOK and his party are not happy about the reforms, which might tip off the globalists to try and form a fake centrist movement in Greece as elections are approaching. A few related bits and updates as of maybe just an hour ago, and as James, I believe you mentioned last week, that when folks are watching these episodes and as we're covering breaking news stories, things may have developed beyond what we were able to put into this episode. But as I have it right now, the updates: clashes as Greeks strike against the new austerity cuts. That's from the French agency Press and from the Los Angeles Times. Greek protest against budget cuts turn violent. I was contacted just about probably 15 hours ago from a friend of Media Monarchy who lives in Greece. And he said, quote, "The next 2 days are going to be out of control in Athens with protests against the austerity measures," end quote. We'll also provide, James, we discussed this story a few months back as we wondered if Greece was the financial canary in the coal mine. James.
I think it's difficult not to see the Greek case in that light, and I wish I knew how to say cojones in Greek, because I just want to say that it's good to see at least the Greek people have been They've been put down and out, and they've been spat upon and trod upon by their politician superiors and the banking interests behind them. But they're not gelded, and they still have the cojones, or the Greek equivalent, to stand up and to at least not go quietly. And of course, we don't want to see violence, and violence is not going to solve anything. But at this point, austerity measures certainly aren't going to solve anything. So I think the people have to make their voices heard, and unfortunately, the violence is going to continue to escalate if political recourse is continued to be denied to these people, because as many people have pointed out, I mean, it's just a matter of timing now, the Greek collapse, because it's mathematically impossible that they're going to pay back their debt. And so it is absolutely insane what's happening there, and I think you're right. I think we have to see this as a canary in the coal mine type thing, and myself being a Canadian, I have, you know, I look at it from the North American perspective, and I wonder, you know, if we can extrapolate from what's happening right now in North America and see, you know, down the road a few years, depending on what happens, I mean, could we be seeing that coming to North America? And in some ways, maybe it's even a hopeful thing that to see what's happening right now, at least with the Occupy movement, whatever you think about the Occupy movement and what it is, at least it represents there are large numbers of people who are willing to get out and do something. You know, we've just seen such complacency on the part of the people for so long, such apathy, and so many people who are just unwilling to even go out and do anything whatsoever to actually affect change. So again, I'm not saying that Occupy is a great thing, but at least it's something, you know. And so there's a lot of issues here, but I my heart and goes out to the Greek people who are suffering for the ills of their bankster overlords.
And it's not just Greece. And this article from Shepard Ambellis of the IntelHub.com goes on to say that, you know, this can be the United States as well, as we've seen massive troop movements and all the discussions, you know, reported in the Washington Post about, you know, tens of thousands of military troops here in the States being prepared for some type of civil unrest. And I think, James, again, whether it's Greece or whether it's the States or where, it's the same story again and again of, you know, interconnected multi-generational serial killers who set up the private central bank and print the money and charge interest, and it goes on and on and on, and they take the gains and they throw us the debts, and we're supposed to pay all them. And so that's what we see wherever people are occupying all around the world. It's generally because of that kind of scenario that's played out. I mean, am I right?
That's exactly right. And ultimately, I think the real task right now is to occupy consciousness, because ultimately this is a war for your mind. And that's what it comes down to. Violence is not going to be the answer to anything here, but intellectual violence, resistance, refusing to let them occupy your mind is absolutely the key. And on that note, I had a listener, Jeff Swanson, who took it upon himself to go to Occupy Vancouver and put together a video report of what was happening there on October 15th. And I've watched it. It is excellent, absolutely brilliant report. So I'll just leave it at that. It'll go up on my YouTube in the next couple of days. I really hope people take a look at that, and when they see it, like it, favorite it, share it with everyone you know. It's a genuinely great report.
All right, James, thank you so much. For folks keeping score at home, this has been the 88th episode of NewWorldNextWeek.com, and myself, I have my Media Monarchy episode prepped this weekend to go over all the news all around the world. As James, again, you and I said off mic that there's so many things going on. It is tough to give an overview and get into depth on any of these stories, but as we say, don't take our word for any of it and go research all of this stuff for yourself.
That's exactly right. See you next week.
Thank you.